a lot of familiar faces, a few new ones. So perhaps for the sake of, let everybody know who's who here, I'll kick it off here. We'll start with Mr. Boyd is here, and just go around and introduce yourself, whether you're a neighbor or whatever.
My name is Jesus Boydis, and I live off of Rex Brazil Lane, right adjacent to the fair here.
I'm Betty Boytis, and we live along the back fence of the big house.
I'm Linda Randall. I live on Houlihan, down here by the corner.
I'm John Basso. I live in the Seagull Terrace, off Whiting Road, the back.
I'm Fatima Bernard. I live in 171 Washington.
And that's your significant other there?
Same.
Yeah. Well, welcome. Yes, ma'am.
Actually, most of them live at 28 Delaney Avenue.
I'm Gloria Shedler. I live at 10 Delaney Avenue.
I'm Alan Berryman. I live at 160 Paulson Road, a mile away.
And I'm Janice Harriman at 160 Paulson Road.
I'm Emily Gavin on Webber.
And Brian and Jill Pell live on the end of Webber.
I'm Gary Polder. I live on Valley View Road off the lower Mount Madonna Road.
My name is Mark Mayfield. I live over at the 19th Massive Axis Avenue.
My name is Alan Michaels. I live at 139 Whiting Road.
Lee Fisher. I live at Washington and Tuttle in Watsonville.
Jean Gregorix, I live in Foothill Drive, a little tiny village just before this point.
I'm Paula Tanner, and I live at 115 Anderson Drive.
I'm Milton McGill. We live at the same house. That's my bed.
Sam Wright, we live at 565 Edenvale Lane, off of Old Mountain Drive. And Terry.
Max Kelly and Paula, my wife, we live on Rancho Brazil Lane.
And I'm Judith Ain, and I live on Thompson Road.
Ma'am, you want to? And then, why don't you all just introduce yourselves, and then we'll get into the formal introduction.
John Fitz, race track promoter.
John Kekulani, Agriculture History Project.
Lynn Rossi, Agricultural History Project.
I'm Al Goldwater. I'm an acoustical engineer working for the county fair.
I'm the neighbor, Janet Mize. I'm a Fallowfield Lane off
of Lower Eckerbeth. Okay, great. Well, welcome one and all. There's a little sign-in sheet going around, so make sure you put your name. You got that on there? Okay. And I assume everybody was disseminated the follow-up information from the last meeting. Did that go out in the email
yes.
that you sent out? Is everybody on that email list or want to be on that email list? So you might want to, if you're not on the current email list, check with Mr. Kelly here. He's kind of our point man for that. Can you kind of facilitate that?
Yeah.
Maybe just incorporate it in today's sign-up.
Yeah, anybody that hasn't put their email address or hasn't submitted in the past, should put their email address on here if they want these follow-up information.
Yeah, we're trying to build, a current and active email list for all the neighborhood participants so we get instant info out for y'all and follow-up stuff in these kind of meetings. Finally, before we go into, going into housekeeping matters, the restrooms are right back there, really nice restrooms you have to build. There's plenty of goodies here. Please help yourself. And we should once again thank... here, go ahead, ma'am. Have a seat. You're making me nervous here. Yeah. We should thank once again Ms. Grassi and Mr. Kegelbein for graciously hosting these meetings in their facility here. They're the kind of the ringleaders of this beautiful building here, which is almost part of the fairgrounds. It's essentially a standalone entity. This is their agency, Ag History Project. It's kind of a standalone 501c3 nonprofit that controls and operates this facility. So maybe let's give them a quick hand for helping out. And there were two additional gentlemen. You all want to introduce yourself real quick?
Mark Forno. I live at 555 Eagle Lane.
Okay. And you, sir?
Ma'am.
I'm Kathy Snyder.
Okay, good. Thanks. Then meeting protocol. Just like before, we're gonna go through an agenda here of discussion items. We welcome your concerns and input on the issues that we're trying to resolve that are still outstanding out here. And then more importantly, we're going to segue our planning efforts here in the future and your concerns and comments and participation in this master planning process that will be kicking off here very soon, as soon as we kind of recover from the fair. And so that's a perfect segue. I thought we'd at least have an agenda item here. Item three, since we just concluded our annual fair a little over a week ago, I know staff would be very interested in hearing some immediate feedback of what was good, what was bad, what was in need of a possible improvement or suggestions for next year's fair. And, we can kick that off right now for a quick discussion. So anybody have any feedback on their experiences this past week when we concluded our fair? Wonderful.
I thought the noise level was under control. It was probably one of the most quietest fairs in the last 15 years that I've experienced here. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's due to your diligence of noise abatement and all that stuff, but I thought it was a really quiet, well-run horse events. All the horse events and all that stuff is they got loud when they needed to get loud. We made pertinent announcements. Other than that, they took care of business.
Good. Excuse me. Are you taking notes?
I'm trying to.
Okay, good. Thank you. So I'm going to get some notes and minutes here. I think to follow up the concerns actually that was specifically raised in the last neighborhood meeting by Mr. Avoidus and a couple others. If you recall, there was a concern about the numerous number of loudspeakers we had mounted on those poles down there in the equestrian area. And it wasn't until after our last neighborhood meeting I went down there and looked at what was really going on down there, and I couldn't believe how many there were and how many were actually pointed in the neighbors' backyards. And so that following week, and we have the evidence here to prove it, we went out and physically removed about a dozen of those big speakers, and you can see them right there in the back of the truck. I think that one right there in the front there was pointed directly into Mr. Boyd's backyard. And so I think this is... And the house, yeah, oh yeah. And so I think we immediately addressed and abated that issue. It was kind of senseless. I don't even know why there were that many in the first place, and why in the heck they were pointed, completely away from the staging areas for the horses and what have you. So that was hopefully good. That's hopefully good news for y'all that we immediately got on top of that, and there's the proof to show it right there. Another thing we've been doing during the fair is working closely with all the independent equestrian folks that come in here, because a lot of them come in here and they don't really, if they're new, they don't even know our protocol around here. So we've been trying to educate them that, hey, you go over there and turn up the amplifier. 10 is not the standard range for the noise level here. We're trying to keep it actually at 3 and 4, and we're going to physically limit our amplifier down there so that nobody who comes in can actually kick the noise up higher than a 3 or 4 level on the amplifier. So that's one just quick follow up on that. Anybody else? Yes, sir.
Just commenting on the noise level of the fair. Generally, it was much improved. There was a period of an hour and a half it was quite loud, music coming, and then
during a concert.
Apparently, yeah. It turned down before it was finished.
Mm-hmm. At 9 o'clock. What time was that?
I'm guessing about that.
Right.
And then it was after that, it was hardly a very long, but it was much improved.
Right. Right. We had I think I was trying to monitor all those amplified music events. I think Thursday night when the Trailer Park Troubadours played, I think that might have been, was it Thursday night? That seemed to me that was the loudest night.
We didn't. I usually let it go before I complain or even write anything down. And when it was roughly
'Cause well, in the future, you know, maybe just take a little note and jot, because that's valuable information for us to do a follow-up in case. Because, you know, I made a mental note that Thursday night at Trailer Park Troubadours. Probably kicked it up a little too much there. And that was the most favorite and well-attended event out here during the... Any fellow... what do they call them? Flamingo heads?
Oh, I love them.
So you're a flamingo head? Okay. Anyway, anybody else? Yes, sir.
I heard from a couple other people that aren't here today, and my wife and I were out of town, as we have been for the past 3 years because of previous loud fairs. But I heard from a couple other neighbors that were around and not here today, and they did confirm that with Mr. Boyd is Aaron reiterated, it seemed like it was much more calmed down this year than ever before. So, thank you very much.
Okay. Anybody else? Yes, ma'am.
I'd also like to add that the generators didn't seem as loud as years past. So, I don't know if...
Generators?
The generators.
Oh, yeah. Well, for like the carnival?
And that sort of thing. And we never mentioned that in years past because we really felt that we needed to support the fair in that week. But I really would like to mention we appreciate the fact that even the generators seemed a little softer.
Well,
it wasn't obtrusive.
Well, the whole my experience, the whole industry standard for these large generators, even the big 60 kW, and you can maybe attest to that, Jesus, these things are almost whisper, they call them whisper quiet now. And they're incredibly quiet. And we had two of them actually on backup here, just in case we had power outages ready to kick on for backup power. Fortunately, I didn't have to use them. But I think the ones the industry is going towards are these real whisper quiet ones, right?
Right, yeah. California's pretty much pushed that.
I think it's that's where it's
better.
Okay. Well, you thank the regulators that are pushing that. So, anybody else? Yes, ma'am.
I just want to say we had a booth at the fair, and I was so appreciative of having it and of the venue that the fair provides.
Okay.
So
good.
Just a little appreciation.
You had a lot of people.
We got a lot of people, yeah. We were trying to educate people about Lyme disease, and so I think we helped a lot of people.
The one thing I haven't heard, which was a really big concern for us, is the traffic and parking, especially on the weekends. Did anybody experience any adverse, traffic, problems or, in your neighborhood or out here on the highway? Because Saturday was pretty wild. We had, I think, Mr. Kagebine out there and I were out there trying to figure out how we're going to park almost 9,000 cars with only 6,000 parking spaces.
Is that Gallagher?
Yeah. Well, no, Gallagher was... Gallagher was...
I thought it was Saturday.
Was he Saturday? Okay, it was Gallagher. Yeah. Yes, ma'am. Do you have something?
I've lived on Delaney Avenue for 28 years. Or I live at 28 Delaney, but I've been there for 18 years. And one of the first years that we lived there, my husband's company vehicle was broken into. So since then, we put no parking signs up and down the street, and so now you guys all know that it's not for the city, but, and we haven't had any problems. We actually had somebody waiting across the street for the 20 minutes to come back to park, and I guess they told them to come back in 20 minutes, there was no place for them, and so we offered them to park in our driveway. But other than that, we kind of keep some parking off of our street.
Okay, all right. That worked just fine, though, huh? All right, anybody else had any? What we're hoping to do next year, we're already planning for this already, is we do anticipate a big draw, especially on a weekend, Saturday or Sunday. We're going to be working with possible additional on-site parking provisions or supplemental shuttles. Although we had the Metro bus coming back for the first time in years this year, You know, they ran shuttles on Saturday and Sunday. I'm still not sure how well advertised that was and well attended. Did anybody see those buses packed when they were coming and going from the downtown area? Because we were trying to encourage more park and ride opportunities. So if we can kick that up, hopefully next time, that'll help relieve some of that congestion we got out here. Yes, ma'am.
One of the things that I did for our volunteers who were coming to help with the booth is to offer an alternative route around on Lakeview up and back over Carlton in this case. And just, I don't know whether offering alternative routes so that everybody's not going the same way might be another strategy.
Well, some of these folks may not. Yeah, you may not want that over there.
Yeah. What?
Well, it's just an
idea.
I know. Another thing we witnessed this year, and hopefully, you know, this may be, you know, a growing situation next year. We were advertising heavily over the hill in the Santa Clara Valley area. And as a result, I think we pulled in an incredible number of folks from over the hill. Because at one point on Saturday, when I was standing out here, there was as many cars coming in down off the pass, pulling right into the grounds here, as they were coming from town, pulling left. And I think that's due to the fact that, you know, the Santa Clara County Fairgrounds is in the process of either shutting down or phasing out or not being what it historically has been in the past. And as a result, you know, even the 4-H kids over the hill there, and John can attest to this, we pulled in an incredible number of the kids.
Yes, 4-H members from each species.
From the Santa Clara Valley, right?
That based on the availability of space we have.
Right. And that was pretty much a record from before, right? So we're pulling in more folks from over the hill. And I could, you know, that's, we should be kind of considering that, you know, a blessing, because unfortunately, you know, their loss over there is going to be our gain. You know, and we get to share this facility with all those good folks in Santa Clara Valley, which, you know, unfortunately, may not be having in the future, you know, a county fair anymore. So, any other last minute discussions on? Yes, sir.
My wife and I really enjoy the fair. We come down, and one thing with maybe it's a little bit self-centered, but there was a parking pass offered, for people who want to come more than once.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, it's $20. Yeah, I mean, we like coming down and enjoying the food and all that stuff.
So like a parking pass for all week?
Yeah, or a discount, maybe like a package.
I was actually thinking about that myself, so make a note of that tonight.
Because we come down, we do the 4-H.
So you get a freaking flyer type.
A break for us working guys.
Right. Well, that's, we've actually been thinking about that, and we're going to actually revamp all these passes and parking situations next time, especially by the back gate for the livestock.
One thing, though, during the week, my wife and I, we come parking. All the guys who were getting in the phone, they were very nice. Everybody was polite. They shuffled us in. We parked. Getting out was really easy, so it was. I think it was a little better than last year.
Right. Well, we worked extra hard with the guys this year. That crew that's out here, those guys are just phenomenal. They're just, you know, we even brought on some additional crew to help out with the new handicap parking. And did you like that? Did you like that layout this year?
That
better?
Worked pretty good this
okay.
year.
That was a brand new experiment. And we're going to try to kick that up and make that even better next year.
The only thing that I thought might be an improvement, I don't have much trouble, but sometimes the cars are parked close and some handicapped people need to have the space to get out on the side. That's why they have those extra hash marks by them. But I don't know whether.
Well, that was kind of an experiment this year. We're going to really make that nicer next year.
To think about that aspect of it might be helpful.
Maybe one more minimum.
Yeah. One more you got stuck in that long line. There was one line one night. Good Lord, y'all see that line? It was unbelievable.
In the morning, there wasn't a line.
And And one other comment I heard, somebody was appalled and shocked that kennel corn, there wasn't a kennel corn out this year. So I don't know what happened there. So write that one down, too. Yes, sir.
I wanted to mention before we go on about these petitions, if people have some petitions and with signatures, if we could kind of round them up and send them this way, we'll tally them up. Just while we're doing other stuff, so that'd be great.
Okay, good. All right, so we're done with that. I appreciate all your comments. Once again, we're taking all this stuff serious. You know, we're really trying to make this even a more pleasant and pleasurable, exciting experience next year, and less of an impact on all the neighbors. So that's our primary goal. Item four, we're going to have a follow-up discussion now on some of the topics we talked about already, the noise mediation that was discussed at length at our last meeting. We touched on the fact that we've already immediately abated all these silly speakers in the horse arena that were pointed all over creation and for no reason. And so a dozen of them have been removed. They're sitting right there in the truck for you to look at. And I was thinking of maybe making a public art piece out of these things, paint them up nice, and hang them up like mobiles or something. We call it the Rancho Brazil,
The title
speaker mobile speaker abatement mobile art or something. I don't know. But anyway, so we've been working on that. And the other big issue and concern was the marketplace and the bands, the live bands that played down there, and so we took those concerns and comments to heart. We met extensively with the operator of the marketplace, and strongly suggested that after the 2-week hiatus, when they were going to shut down during the fair, that they, when they come back, we want to experiment by taking them down out of the lowlands there, where they were kind of, setting up their band on a big stage with speakers pointing in all directions and pretty much unobstructed by anything, so that, the music and the noise they were, creating was pretty much echoing through the whole valley here. And so, as a result, last Sunday, we moved them up to a little L-shaped hollow next to the Cresetti building. And the goal there was maybe two. There was two or three goals. And Manny, you're here. I want to introduce Manny. He's our main maintenance guy here. And Manny's kind of like my right hand man as far as all the facilities operations here. And so what Manny and I did, we discussed moving this, band staging area for the marketplace up to this protected, alcove area next to Cresetti, with the idea that the massive massing of that big building, that's our largest building on the grounds here, would help shield a lot of that amplified music, and also, by setting the speakers down lower on the ground and still having the band play on this, stage they have, that the speakers would be actually, muffled with the massing of the people in front of it and all the booths. And also it helps, upgrade the amenities for this marketplace by getting these folks out of that dirt and dust and situation down there, and we can actually provide them, functioning restrooms there that have exterior access to the Cresetti Hall, so all these folks will actually have a real live bathroom instead of those dumb porta potties. And so we kicked this off last Sunday, and there was kind of some mumbling and grumbling and pissing and moaning to some extent. But once it got kicked off, around 3 is when the big bands started up, wasn't it? And this was the biggest band, by the way, that they've ever had. It was a big 10-piece band. And I was out here pretty much the whole day that day, helping set up and supervising the whole thing and watching the gate people collecting parking fees. Around 3 o'clock, Manny and I kind of walked over, and as we're walking around, coming up to the place, really couldn't hear anything appreciable at first. And then we kind of got through the crowd, and it was, oh, wow, now I hear a band. And so we thought, wow, this might be the fix. And so I subsequently, you know, talked to some of the neighbors. I think I talked to you, Mr. Kelly, right, about that day. And some folks were even surprised that the marketplace was even happening last Sunday, because they didn't hear any loud music. Did anybody hear? You heard something? Was it, how bad was it?
It wasn't as bad as it was months prior. Yeah.
But on a scale of 1 to 10, I mean, what?
It was about 4.
Okay, 4.
So, but remember, we're a lot closer than most of the neighbors, okay. So.
It made a big difference. It was a positive.
We were making
bear in mind, this is, you know, we're taking incremental, you know, experimental steps here.
We didn't really notice until about 4 o'clock. We thought maybe he stepped off the premises or something. Because that's, as I'm feeding the animals, then I had noticed.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so there's still, you argue, some room for possible improvement.
It's tolerable now. Okay. I couldn't even work on that.
Okay, all right. Okay, well, that's good. That's valuable information. Anybody else? Yes, sir.
I just want to bring up a couple of really fundamental issues, rather than incremental issues. One of them is necessity, and the other one is frequency. Now, some events, noise is a necessity. You can't have car race without engine noises. You can't have a fair or a strawberry festival without loud noises. Okay, so if it's that kind of an event, you need to have the accompanying noise. You can't do without it. And the other one is frequency. If you have an event that happens once a year, it's once a year, like a fair. If you have an event that happens every week in the morning, it's a whole different animal. Mm-hmm. Now, and I question why a marketplace or a flea market or whatever you might call it needs to have loud amplified music. Now, the Cabrillo Farmers Market's been going on for years. And they have an acoustic band you could hear about 30 feet away. People in Aptos wouldn't put up with it. Mm-hmm. I mean, they would shut them down, like, right now. I don't think Santa Cruz has amplified music. Downtown Watsonville doesn't have amplified music. There's no necessity to have amplified music in the marketplace, and there's no reason to have amplified music every weekend morning that to annoy the people around here. The whole concept of amplified music in a marketplace makes absolutely no sense except for the profit of whoever's throwing it during the event.
Yeah, well, this was discussed at length at the last meeting, and Ms. Rodriguez, who the operator, was here, and you know, she was invited to attend today, and I'm not sure why she's not here. But you know, her argument was, well, this is the catalyst, this is the catalytic. I'm just being the devil's advocate here. This is a catalytic agent she needs to attract the numbers of people to make this, you know, make this pencil out.
Well,
so anyway, that's her argument.
No, that's correct.
And,
I talked to her on the phone in length the first Sunday while she was monitoring the decibels, and she told me that they specifically raised the parking fees from $3 to $5 so that she could hire the live bands and be like the Berryessa Farmers Market in San Jose. That's what they wanted to emulate, and that it was part of the culture that they wanted that loud, amplified music.
Well, let me. That's not part of the culture, though. You know, I was hoping that she'd show up here, because when I listened to her last time, you know, it's a shame that she's not here to defend herself. But the amplified music is not part of the Mexican culture. Acoustic music is. Mm-hmm. So she's using that as a catalyst. I think, you know, it's obviously for monetary gains, but the culture is acoustic music, you know, and she was harping on it that the culture necessitated electrified music. Well, that's not, you know, but that's, you know, we're beating somebody up who's not here.
Right. And yes, sir. Good.
And follow up discussion here, regardless of the amplified music, where is the audience and how much amplification that you need is the basic question. Okay. All you need is an acoustic band, that's adequate. But if you need more,
where does that sound have to go? Does it have to go beyond the perimeter of where the activity is? That's the big question. And Mr. Goldwater's report, I think, spoke to that. It's something about power, empowerment, if I've got that right. People are attracted to this power and this sound, okay? And that's what the operator is counting on, attracting people.
Well, that sounds like a perfect segue for the second part of our discussion here. Then, jump the gun here. Well, let's go ahead and introduce our new, acoustic engineering consultant. Really had a great chance of. Actually, I called around after our last meeting to find someone who was tailor-made, and local to help us with these ongoing. Discussions, and so what I did is called about three or four people, and they all said, "Well, you got to call this guy at Live Oak, Alan Goldwater." So I touched base with him and said, "Here's our situation, and would you be willing to come out here and work with us, and also more importantly, not deal with immediate issues and concerns that we're grappling with now and trying to resolve, but more importantly, be part of this planning consultant team that will be, working on a master plan this next year to plan out how this place is going to grow and develop in the next 20, 30 years, and have, expert consultation and input from a certified acoustic expert that will be incorporated, whose findings will be incorporated actually in the final environmental impact report that we'll be doing the following year to certify the master plan. So without any further ado, I'm going to introduce Mr. Goldwater here, and he's, not to put him on the spot, all I really ask him to do is come today is, do a little meet and greet, kind of go over the findings of a study he did after our last meeting. That was kind of an on-the-spot thing where we went down and monitored the marketplace one Sunday afternoon, and then a big dance and horse event down in the horse arena later that same evening and afternoon, which really kind of got out of hand, and we got some and he's going to talk a little bit about his methodology of coming, up with more scientifically sound meter readings and what have you than the historic readings that we got in these dumb little Radio Shack, decibel meters that, had readings all over the map, I question the validity of any of those readings in the past. And then finally, we're going to talk about also is his feedback on the current noise policy that the Fair Board has adopted here about five years ago, was last updated, and how, we're going to make suggestions and tweak that and bring it back to the board for some more realistic parameters for both indoor and outdoor noise levels. So, Mr. Goldwater, you want to...
Thanks for asking me to join the meeting.
I just
see so many neighbors here concerned with the issues and willing to work with the mayor to solve them. I'll just briefly tell you my background. I have a degree in physics and architecture from Columbia University. Although I'm not a practicing architect, I specialize in acoustics of buildings and community noise issues as related to the planning process. I've been doing this in Santa Cruz County for about 30 years. And work with many developers as well as lots of community and government organizations, including the Redevelopment Agency, County Fair, the Soquel Union School District, and manufacturers like the Lipton plant. So the bulk of my practice involves compliance to the building code and to the Santa Cruz General Plan. These are both standards that are based on national standards established in the building code and in other documents.
And in order for my reports to have legal standing, they have to comply with those national techniques for measurement. So my equipment is what's called class one equipment. That means that it's calibrated and certified to a standard of accuracy that's traceable to the National Bureau of Standards. And so when I make measurements, I can certify that they're accurate within a certain very small decibel range. And you might have seen that in my report, that I always specify the accuracy of measurement. Now, getting to the noise standards of the county fair, these were set, I understand, about 10 years ago in a casual document. And frankly, it didn't make sense to me when I read it, because it allowed a higher level of noise outdoors than it did indoors. From the point of view of a neighbor, the noise indoors isn't a problem, because you've got a building around that noise source and it's going to contain it. And so as far as neighborhood noise standards, community noise standards as they're called in the legal term, sources of outdoor noise really should be held to a stricter standard than sources of noise inside a building. And so long term, I think if the fair wants to have concerts at a venue here, it would be better to put them inside. I don't know if the Grassetti building is big enough for the kind of draw, but a facility that offers some kind of containment of the noise would be helpful. An amphitheater. Some of you may have been to the Mountain Winery, which is another exposed location on a high spot. And so they've gone to great lengths to contain the sound there by building a bowl into the ground. You can see some of that done over here at the racetrack, and that helps contain the noise of the cars. So that might be a possible place for a similar kind of thing for concerts to be held. Yes?
I've been in the Mountain Winery many times. I lived in Saratoga for years, mm-hmm. and that did not work. All of the people that live surrounding the winery, uh-huh. they can't stand it. They absolutely can't stand it. They hate it.
Yeah.
It's extremely disruptive to every night that a concert goes on there.
Understood.
It was very tragic that someone had fallen to their death at a recent concert.
Yes, I heard about that.
Yeah. A lot of concerns over that kind of
message. Yeah.
And there's absolutely no benefit to the neighbors whatsoever. Right. Zero.
Right.
In fact, it's had a major impact on the property values of the neighboring properties for many years.
Very true. Yeah, the traffic situation is
horrible.
Sure, it's a mess for people that live up there.
It's horrible.
Yeah. So really what's necessary for that kind of a concert venue is an enclosed space, the Sanford Civic Auditorium, if you want to have 1,500 or 1,800 people. That's the kind of building you're going to need for it. Yeah.
Along that same line, we've experienced problems when they have had concerts here in the enclosed space, but because of the weather outside, they would open all the doors. And unfortunately, a significant amount of noise would then emanate across the countryside,
yeah.
just because of these open doors.
This is a problem I run into.
Yeah. One fresh air, but what
yeah.
about the rest of us?
When I do a test for a use permit for a nightclub, one of the key elements that I always emphasize is that the permit is conditional on all the doors and windows being closed, and the owner of the facility must install proper air conditioning or ventilation. So, if I'm asked to participate in the design of that kind of facility, you can guarantee that's going to be on here, the requirement. Yeah.
Yeah, and all due respect for your obvious expertise here, decimal levels in acoustic engineering is a very objective thing. You can put numbers behind
them. Yeah.
Noise, however, is subjective. So depending on what the source is, if they're playing my favorite band at 90 decibels, I could probably live with that. If they're playing rap music at 30 decibels, I'm probably not going to be able to live with that.
That's a good point, but keep in mind that public standards for environmental impact have to satisfy everyone's needs, not just certain people. And so in order to not discriminate against certain kinds of music, the standards have to be written with some form of measurement. Now, this is a good time to bring up the issue that the gentleman over there mentioned about the subjective impact of different kinds of music. And this is a... Let me finish this point and I'll get back to you. This is something where the law is deficient in addressing the changes of musical style and culture as they evolve. Specifically, the evolution of hip-hop, rap music, has had a huge negative impact on the entire musical culture of our society because it emphasizes a great deal of low-frequency bass energy. And all other forms of music have gone along with that because when people go out to buy a sound system, they buy something that has a bunch of little speakers and then a big subwoofer. And all that subwoofer does is slam you with bass. And so everybody wants their music to sound good on the sound systems that people own. So country music has lots of bass in it now, except for acoustic music. And rock and roll, all of its forms, have had to adopt some of these things coming out of the prevalence of hip-hop. And so you even see it in the regional kinds of Mexican music that were played out here at the two events I attended. And those lines in my report specifically address that problem, that the way sound is measured under the standards currently prevailing de-emphasizes bass frequencies. Now, there are technical reasons for this going back 75 years in the industry, but they're not appropriate for today's music. They might have made sense in the big band era, where all you had was a stand-up bass and no amplifiers. But now, when a band comes up and they've got 16 speaker cabinets for the bass player, all of that energy is out there driving people nuts, and the sound level meter doesn't even see it, unless it's a very expensive professional instrument that has a switch to turn off that bass de-emphasis. And so the final test in my report was aimed at comparing the A-weighted measurements that all of the noise standards have adopted against a C-weighted or flat measurement that includes the bass frequencies. And I could see that there was about 8 times as much volume in the bass frequencies as there was in the rest of the range. And I would guess that a lot of you that have been hearing noise around the neighborhood, what bothers you is the bass, the thumping.
Exactly.
Right.
That's what it is.
And so one of my goals as I proceed with the work that the fairground has planned in the area of acoustics is to urge them to adopt a noise measurement standard that includes limits to the unweighted or flat noise measurement. So the professional meter has to be used, but at least it's going to recognize that excessive bass energy and control it. And hopefully the other planning professionals that will be involved in this will come on board with that and make it part of the general redevelopment plan for the fairgrounds. You had a question over there.
I would like to say thank you, and I appreciate the fact that you've given us the information and started the plan for the measurement of the sound levels. But I would also like to address the bowl/pit idea, and that is when I'm standing on my porch and the dancing horses and they have the 16 speakers on the ground, it was so loud that I could not even have a conversation with my family member, and it was rattling my windows. When I actually looked out there, I didn't see more than maybe plus or minus 10 or 12 horses. The rest were all people. So when we speak of the bowl system, and also speaking in reference to the bowl system for the races, when that is coming through, we specially designed our house so that we would have a sound buffer in order that we can have evenings with our family. For 3/4 of my house, we hear another dishwasher in reference to your races. So as most of us have done our research, we have really tried to work with the neighborhood in doing that.
Right.
So my problem is, though, whenever the sound is really late at night, I would like to know who is going to be here to represent our neighborhood in the frequency for the once-in-a-while dancing horse concerts. And I know I should be addressing that. That's why I'm going back and forth. So the bowl is working probably or maybe at some other place, but I don't think it necessarily works here. Our bowls aren't deep enough.
That's a very good point. And
so we need position throughout
the
neighborhood.
And they also have to be designed with the community in mind. And so what you want to do is create an amphitheater that has a shell behind it that actually curves up behind it and over the stage between the band and the residences of concern. So you want to direct the sound away from the houses, and that would mean, I think, down across 152. I've seen to be very few houses on that side, and if somebody lives there, forgive me. Okay, it may be that there's no adequate solution for outdoor containment of amplified music. Now, down in the horse arena, when I made those measurements, the band was way, way too loud for the people's comfort and safety, let alone the comfort of the neighbors. And so my recommendation would be to not allow any event of that kind at that location, especially with that promoter who ignored these noise standards passed from it. Well, that's hard to say because it's a purpose-built facility designed for horse events, but I don't think the amplified music that was offered at that event about a month ago was appropriate either for the setting or for the event itself. Combining a highly amplified, what was essentially modern hip-hop band with horse event doesn't make sense to me. There has to be some member of staff or some mechanism present with an accurate, professional quality sound level meter who's willing to go down there during the event and say, okay, you're done, shut it down.
Excuse
because
me.
Otherwise people are going to ignore those standards.
Okay, yeah. I'm the main guy in here.
Yeah.
The sound meter I got is $50 from the shack.
Yeah.
I didn't prove people. That's what the office provided to me.
Of course.
What I work with. That day when you were here, why don't you tell me, and I can go up to Tony and say, Tony, you're too way high. You never say
that. Because that wasn't my job. My job is an independent.
You should tell me that.
Right.
You don't have that problem.
If Mike hires me to do that job, I'd be happy to do it. But my job on that day was to provide an objective report of the situation on the ground. And I can only do that by not letting the people know that I'm here. Because if they know I'm a professional sound consultant, and I'm there to measure how loud they get, well, they're going to turn it down. It's human nature. And so when I do these tests in the field, I do it incognito. I didn't even tell Mike where I was or what I was doing. Yes?
You're studying business with the speedway.
No, because there were no racing events that day.
Because it was one day.
Yeah. I did a study of the speedway about 7 or 8 years ago and presented a verbal report to the management. I think it was the board of directors of the fair and made some recommendations. I don't know if those were of any use or not. And yes?
They weren't used.
Okay.
Comment on the cutoff level or standard where hearing loss begins. Is it 80 decibels or 85 or somewhere in between there? And also on this enclosed concert area, when the enclosure is exposed to a lot of energy from within, it becomes a huge speaker itself.
Depends on what it's made of, yeah.
Could you comment on that?
As far as the standards for hearing damage, they depend on length of exposure. And typically for 1 hour exposure, you want to limit it to 80 decibels continuous. There are OSHA standards widely available, and those standards would be made part of my contribution to the redevelopment plan when that's appropriate. As far as the enclosure problem, an uninsulated corrugated steel building will not provide very much protection for base frequencies. It will limit the higher frequencies, but because the bases are concerned, it's not a suitable building either inside or outside for loud amplified music. You really want a concrete block building, and that will provide a very good barrier against a full range of sound frequencies if it's properly built.
As a follow-up, in terms of energy level, the bass frequencies compared to the higher, which contains the most energy?
The bass frequencies typically contain the most physical energy. They're not heard as loud as other frequencies at low levels. Mm-hmm. But at higher levels, human hearing is potentially more damaged by bass frequencies because of that lack of perception. You might not hear the bass. You feel it in your belly, and that's why it's popular with young kids, because they get this visceral charge from it. It sells a lot of booze, to be blunt. And, as far as the energy content, it's part of the definition of sound level. And so an equal decibel reading at a particular frequency will, by definition, have the same sound energy as the same decibel reading at another frequency. That's part of the physics of measuring the sound. You're measuring the sound energy. In the back there.
Is that hearing loss decibel include babies and children too?
Yeah, if you have a three-year-old screaming in your ear for an hour, you could get hearing damage from it.
I was worrying about the music and children.
If you brought a young child to a rock concert and didn't provide earplugs, you're not doing that child any good. But this question of hearing damage is not the primary concern for community noise exposure, because you folks are going to be 1,000 feet or so from the speakers, or maybe even only 500 feet. The level is going to be down in the range of 60 to 70 dB at the loudest.
Not really. I have a sound meter too. It's not as professional as yours, but it is, has been calibrated by a professional.
Uh-huh.
And I get continuous readings of well above 80. And I've seen maximum readings of 95, 96, 97 decibels, dBA, slow response,
right,
on my back porch, and I live a third of a mile away. That's what, almost a couple thousand feet from the racetrack. And this goes on for like, maybe 5-6 hours.
Yeah, so that's enough to be concerned, and you should make note of that, Mike, that there's potential hearing damage resulting from that activity, even outside the fairgrounds perimeter.
And then if you extrapolate, obviously, as you know, and get closer to the fairgrounds or the racetrack specifically, you can imagine, and you've done the measurements already, of what's happening in the spectator stands, as well as the pit crews and any other employees working that entire area. You can imagine. You figure it out.
Let me say something, if I may.
Sure.
You're referring to a study that was done, and this is before your time, with speedway, so I'm not laying it on your ear, but we will later, okay? Stand by for criticism. Mike, you weren't here at the time, Mr. Kagenheim was, but a group of us, represented by an attorney, and I don't know if anybody else here in this room was part of this, formally hired this gentleman as an acoustical engineer to do a study of the noise from the speedway. And we had a series of hearings here, public hearings, about that whole issue, the speedway, the noise, as well as the number of races. And at that point, I would have to say this room was equally populated by people representing the whole race environment versus the local residents. And We arrived at an understanding that there would be no Saturday night races. In fact, one of the race crews said, well, we've already taken their Friday nights away. It's only fair that we don't take their Saturday nights away. That was the compromise. And there's no question that the number of races has increased over the last 7 or 8 years. That's for sure. Secondly, the report that was done, was it from Webb Road, Callahan Color?
Cavanaugh
Color, yeah. So he and I and Jeff Rosendale were the three that hired the attorney and hired the acoustical engineer. And at that point, we also supplied the Fair Board with the reports from this gentleman here. Nothing was done to implement that. So two issues, really. Number one, represented by an attorney, the number of races that we agreed on has obviously been violated, if you will, since that point. And number two, why the acoustical studies that were done have never really been paid attention to. So I just want to say that as maybe a precursor to the whole discussion about Speedway tonight. So.
Well, we appreciate that feedback, but like I said, I wasn't around here. I wasn't even on the board at that time.
I know, Mike, it's not a criticism of you. I just want to.
Hopefully we're showing good faith here. I understand. Demonstrating that we're gonna do things different from here on out. That's why Mr. Olar is actually seen by us,
right,
not by the neighborhood, but to be our consultant that moves forward in this, and whatever suggestions and mitigation measures that are reasonable, that are gonna resolve hopefully some of these ongoing issues. Try to even mitigate some of these squawking crows out here. Was that a hawk? Okay, well, scratch that. We'll let the hawk screech, but the crows would be more than I have issues with. We'll follow up on that. Do you recall an actual report, written report that was done? Do you all have copies of that?
I
appreciate that. If you get that.
My report was delivered verbally at a meeting at which the directors of the fairground were present. The recommendations that I made long term involved building a sound wall around the racetrack, set sufficiently back that it wouldn't be a hazard to the racers, but it would contain the sound effectively for the neighbors. And that was rejected for reasons of cost. It would have to be at least a 10-foot high concrete wall, and preferably more like 20 feet. It's an architectural challenge and a budgeting challenge for the variety of reasons for the fairgrounds.
I'm sure that was probably reflected in the minutes of that meeting. Do you recall what meeting date that was? If we pull the minutes out to reference that.
I think it was about 77 years.
Well, we'll follow up on that.
I can go through my files, and I did look for a written report, and there was none.
Well, one thing that I'm just throwing out here is the possible additional mitigation measure, and Mr. Prentice can perhaps chime in, but it seems like the industry standards for silencing some of these high-performance vehicles with modified muffler systems and what have you may have evolved in the past 7-8 years to the point where there could be, that could in and of itself be a mitigation measure.
There are very strict standards for noise at almost all paved track professional racing. For example, Laguna Seca and Infinity Raceway up in Napa both have serious neighborhood noise concerns, and they strictly enforce the noise standards that the professional racing associations have put in place at their request.
What about the dirt track? This is a dirt track.
Yeah.
Those are not applicable.
These are much more casual, I think there may be standards out there, but their enforcement is not done on a regular basis.
Well, what I find curious, and this has been going on for over 15 years that we've owned this property, is during the course of the races, if they run preliminary races, whatever times they start, they're at a certain sound level. And closer you get to the main event, to the semis or the main events, they get considerably louder.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're uncorking their headers or if anybody's doing any kind of modifications to their vehicles or the management's monitoring that, but every Friday night or whenever that race is, you can hear them. Main event semis,
yeah.
It gets louder. And, you know, yesterday was the first time in 10 years that I've been here actually trying to monitor it that you guys have shut down at 8:30. Mm-hmm. You guys shut down. That was the first time
ever
that I've ever experienced that.
Yeah.
And I reference back to a letter that you sent Max Kelly that you guys are always done by 9:30.
Yeah.
That's a bogus statement.
I don't think I said that.
You said you were eating.
Yeah, I think we. Yeah, I didn't say that we shut down always. I think that was a goal. I think.
That was your goal. It just seems like you're referencing back to paved tracks, but this is a dirt track, and it seems the rules and regulations are not being applied to this dirt track and this community.
Bob, there are two issues: the existence of a sanctioning body that's capable or tasked with writing noise regulations for participants, and the enforcement of those regulations by the promoter or promoters and the hosting facility. And so those issues both should be investigated, and hopefully will be part of my ongoing involvement in the planning process. If there are not sufficient standards, there's certainly the possibility that the fairground could impose their own standards in exchange for the right to use the facility and then enforce those, maybe at the risk of having the promoter cancel and go somewhere else. Where they would go, I don't know. Lodi is the pretty much the surviving dirt track for professional racing in the Bay Area. And a lot of the races have gone out there, the professional motorcycle races, a lot of them have gone indoors. They do it at the Cow Palace, and they do it at a small track at the San Jose Fairgrounds. But that's under risk of being terminated as well. Yeah.
Are the results of your current assessment available to the public?
That's up to Mike.
You're talking about the report we did a few weeks ago?
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah, that's a public record.
Didn't you get a copy of that?
Yeah. It was sent out on email
yeah, by PDF.
It was attached to your email that went out
Tuesday or something.
Yeah, so look at it. Yeah, these are all, now once again, this is all public information. We're, you know, that's another thing. We want everything to be totally transparent.
Yeah.
We don't have anything to hide here anymore or yeah. Everything's going to be open and transparent from here on out. I hope that's crystal clear, right? Yes, sir. You have a question?
Yeah, a few minutes ago, Mr. Goldwater was mentioning one possible way of containing outdoor noise. It sounded very much like the Hollywood Bowl type of arrangement, the channeling the sound with the structure, right?
It was called a band shell traditionally.
A band shell.
It would be cast in concrete, something really rigid, and it acts like a mirror for the sound. It focuses the sound on the audience,
right?
And it has to be carefully designed, and the sound system that accompanies it has to be compatible with those goals, containing the sound where the people are and not letting it escape out.
And again, my question would be, is the fair willing to spend the money to build something like that in order to accommodate the people who want to have the loud bands?
I think in advance of that, we should ask if the fairgrounds is willing to spend the money to hire Mr. Goldwater to continue his analysis, because this report is just a very remedial scratch of the surface, right, Mike?
Let's segue into the bigger question, the bigger picture here.
Can I ask him a couple questions about the report first, real quick?
Sure.
While he's standing for it.
That's why I'm here.
I had a question. One of the things that's kind of minor, but it's a little misleading, I think. On your summary page, you indicate a column of averages during these seven tests.
Yes.
From the way I read these graphs and levels, your average entries really are minimal entries. They're not average entries.
No, they're exactly averages. If you read the description of the test technique. I use a meter called a logging sound level meter. It takes a measurement every 10 seconds and saves it in memory.
Okay.
I take all of those measurements, some 600 measurements or more for each of those test periods, and I take the numerical average of all those measurements. And that's what the average number is there.
Okay, well, for example, test number one says the average is 64.1 decibels during recorded music at Farmer's Market. If you look at test number one, it shows that exact number as the minimum between these two points, A and B. And here's the average up here.
You're absolutely correct. That guy transcribed the number incorrectly.
So this column is a little bit misleading because when you say average, look at what your averages are. These are all minimums. If you look at every test, these are all minimums.
Okay.
So it's a little misleading when you look at the report and say, oh, well, the average is only 64. Well, it's not.
Thank you for pointing that out, and I'll send you a corrected report.
Disregard the element.
It'll get distributed through.
The other question I had was regarding. I know you were given a copy as a guideline of the county fair's old policy, and you've already alluded to the fact that there's some errors. Initially, the old noise policy allowed a higher decibel rating outside than inside.
Yes,
but wouldn't you agree that there are additional problems with this particular policy in the sense that, for example, for indoors, the idea is to measure 100 feet from the stage, and the sound has to be maintained at or lower than 85, I assume dBA, 85 decibels. 100 feet away from the stage, the indoor venue, is going to put a lot of people in the zone, wouldn't you agree, of potential hearing loss if they're at that decibel level. They're going to be closer to 100 feet to that stage, for example. And likewise, for the other one, 100 feet measurement from 95 decibels away for outdoor events, which you've already alluded to as way too high right there anyway. But the 100 feet, allowing that level of decibels anyway, there are a lot of people in that range.
Okay. All I can say is I had no hand in writing that standard, nor did Mike.
Yeah.
After discussing it with him, I learned that it has not been enforced and will be replaced with a completely new noise standard in which I hope to have a hand. And so your comments are well taken, you are correct in those assumptions. Community noise standards for land use almost always specify measurements to be made at the zoning boundary, which in the case of the fairgrounds would be at the boundary of the fairgrounds property. And so strictly from a community planning point of view, that's how a new standard should be written, so as to comply with prevailing standards in the county general plan, for example.
Well, with that said, though, you're not going to take measurements behind a barn. You're going to come up above the barn so you have a clear line of sight to the...
Well, there are two issues. The law states that the measurements be made at the zoning boundary,
right?
Not at the neighbor's house.
No, but my point is this. You can be at the boundary of the fairgrounds and be behind a building, or you can move up on the boundary.
That's what the law says, and the building helps to block the sound, and so that's valid measurement.
But
I would typically look for the loudest point on that boundary.
That's what I'm looking for. You're going to actually try to mitigate the loudest point.
Yes, the general plan, Santa Cruz general plan, includes noise standards that specify worst case measurements.
Because you can take a sound measurement inside the concrete toilet and say inside the bathroom and say, hey, no, it's 45 decibels.
That's not the way.
That's what I'm trying to find out exactly where you're going to try to take the measurements.
Yeah, they're made at worst case locations and take into account the accuracy of the test. So if it says plus or minus 2 dB. And the law says 70 dB, I have to make sure it's lower than 68.
Right.
To account for the accuracy.
Yeah, the law and the calibration of the equipment.
Another point is, at what vertical level are you testing the sound? The sound level is going to be much lower on a ground level basis than it would be at, say, 20, 30 feet high.
It's usually taken to mean at the height of an average human being's ears off the ground. In the case of building permits, which require a certain noise level inside the building for compliance with the Uniform Building Code, those measurements have to be taken at the height of a human being's head on whatever the height of the building is, third floor or whatever. But that responsibility is on the developer, builder, or owner of that building. It's a different situation in that case. So for community noise standards, typical measurements are made at ground level. The height of a human being's head at ground level.
I'd like to make a point regarding this. I live at about a 400 to 500 foot elevation, mm-hmm. and where I am is about 2 miles away from here, maybe three, on Lower Mount Madonna Road, off of Valley View Road up on the ridge. Every Friday night, the sound of the racetrack is extremely loud. Now, when I drive down on Casterly Road, it's about 1/5 to 1/10 the noise level.
Right.
You go into any higher elevation, the noise increases tremendously.
Right.
Every Friday night that a race goes on, we have to close all the windows in our home. We have to be inside.
No,
we have to have some noise going on inside. Otherwise, it's almost intolerable. We've had family, we've had friends come over to our place on Friday evenings when the races take place. They absolutely will not visit us during those times ever again.
Unfortunately, the professional standards for community noise measurement don't take into account the individual characteristics and terrain of particular properties unless they adjoin the zoning boundary. And so while I sympathize with your problem, and I know exactly where your property is, and I can see how it would be a problem, there isn't much in the existing standards that address that issue. Other factors that are equally a problem are things like temperature gradients. People that live in the valley where fog comes in, the fog will actually act like a lens and focus the sound. And you can see this in the north of Santa Cruz. When the fog rolls in, you can hear events up at the university, all the way in the west side of Santa Cruz, because that fog bank acts like a conduit for the sound.
Well, not only that, but the movement of air will have an effect also.
That's right.
If you got a strong northerly, you're going to hear the sounds of the racetrack much more
in town.
If you've got a strong southerly, you're going to hear it much more along the foothills.
Right, here. But noise standards can't address those individual complaints because there are too many variables involved.
Right, these are quantifiable questions that we're asking here. And as it relates to noise...
All I'm saying is that the prevailing professional standards for community noise don't address those issues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but these are valid issues.
They're valid issues, but how to solve them, I don't know.
Okay.
That's a pretty deep question in community planning.
I think it needs to be addressed.
Okay.
Plus, in item two on your proposal to the fairgrounds, you mentioned that you needed to be provided with an annotated map of fairgrounds and surrounding areas showing potential locations of community noise impact.
Okay, that proposal was not the one under which I was contracted because the fairground declined to hire me at that time for a recommendation of abatement measures. But that's on the table for future discussion as the planning proceeds, and that will be one of my first documents that I need to proceed with that job.
Well, I think this is a perfect segue into wrapping this up, because your point is duly noted. That's why we're retained for $120,000, a top-notch planning consultant firm with top-notch, subs like our acoustic engineer here. We have traffic engineers. We got an economic consultant. We got biotics consultants to be working with us on the riparian corridor restoration plan down at the equestrian area, our pond up here.
What's the name of this company that you've...
RCH.
RCH? Associates.
Yeah, yeah, I'll... Yeah, we, and that's...
You'll send information about them?
Oh, yeah, yeah. In fact, Bob Johnson, the principal, will probably be attending... will be attending the next meeting to meet with you all before the year's out to kind of go over, you know, the scope of this master planning process. It may bring some additional...
Excuse me for interrupting. Yeah. Before we get away from the subject, just under discussion, everything that was mentioned, okay, is very valid. What we should be looking at in terms of this transfer of energy from the fairy, the thermal inversions, okay, that you touched on, Mr. Goldwater, that are very valid. There are some times, we're a half mile away, we have these loud braces. I can just barely hear it muffled in the background. Okay? There are other times when we have to close the windows and make other noise. It's because of the thermal inversion. Okay? Because that sound bounces up and then down sometimes, right into your backyard, right into your house.
Well,
and because we recognize these things, they should be addressed.
Well, you've had the same problem with noise from the freeway, from Highway 1.
No question.
But there's no good solution for these problems because the cost of 100% abatement against all possible weather conditions is out of the realm of
the remedy is volume.
Well, the remedy is to cancel all noise sources, close the freeway. Yes.
Very, very good.
What does that do to our society with no roads?
Ma'am, why don't we let this lady...
Not a practical solution
here. Ma'am, why don't you go ahead?
Okay, thank you. You were talking about that there was an agreement on when the races would be and et cetera. Is there any way of pulling that up so that we can take a look at what the agreement actually was and how that actually... to find out how that differed, how that changed, and how to get that back to... where it was?
That's going to be a discussion at the next meeting, so we'll bring all that back.
So we'll have that record forward,
yes,
so we can take a look at it,
yes,
and figure out what's going on.
Yes,
here.
Ma'am.
I mean, I lived 5 miles away. I have a petition that I've given of about 15 people in my neighborhood, and we all have to close our doors, too, when there's racing, and our windows, and turn up the TV so that you can hear it comfortably, and cannot use
that. That's going to be one of the agenda items. Yes, ma'am, go ahead.
How much does a speedway pay per year to use the fairgrounds?
$100,000. I'm not sure what was the contract amount for the annual use, 60 for the speedway. The question is, what do they pay now annually to lease the facility?
For who?
The speedway.
Speedway.
Yeah, I think about $60,000. Yeah.
If it's $60,000, you can raise $60,000. I'll make it $7,000.
Okay. Well, we'll put that on the agenda. We'll put that on the agenda next time.
I'll put it.
Yes, ma'am.
We'll put some in.
Okay, whoa. We gotta get focused here, folks. Ma'am.
I really appreciate that you're watching and you're successful. But I kind of want to see where this first it was a farmer's market, and now it's a clean market. And then I was going to comment when you raised the parking rates is $15 or $5 the higher you use it, then it gets more like the San Jose market. We don't have the roads here, nor do I really want to see the design of the new market work now. I'd like to provide a farmer's market and keep it with that, not make some big San Jose market there. And I'm wondering about the fairgrounds position on where this new market is going.
Well, that's a good point, and that's going to be coming back for more discussion because they're up for an actual contract renewal. We're trying to establish the parameters of and limits of the scope of the use and activity out here for the next year. and that's going to be actually complemented with an environmental analysis, with an initial study and a negative declaration that will be available, actually open for public comment. So if you have a concern that the scope of the use is probably too intense, then you're under CEQA, the California Environmental Quality Act. You'll be provided an opportunity to provide a comment. And if it's a valid comment and concern, then a mitigation measure has to be imposed as part of the negative declaration to make that, a legal document.
I guess my question is, where do you foresee the flea market?
Well, right now, as I mentioned earlier in the morning, we're in an experimental phase right now. We're actually moved it from its physical location last Sunday to shield the amplified music in the band with the Crescetti building, and that seems to have been working very well. And there's obviously some more fine-tuning that needs to be done with that. And then the scope and the parameters of that use will go back for the board of directors with an environmental analysis here in the very near future. And obviously public comment is going to be provided. You can even show up at the board of directors meeting to testify, any additional concerns you may have at that point. And once the final approval is made for the long-term use of this, hopefully all these issues and concerns have been, hashed out, the proper mitigation measures have been imposed, and this becomes a win-win-win, situation for the fairgrounds, for the neighborhood, and for the operator.
I guess that doesn't really answer my question to where you see this going. Do you see this staying a country event, or do you see this moving towards the San Jose Fremont?
Well, once again, we don't have the parameters yet. I don't have the scope of parameters. And what we, for right now, for example, the operator has agreed to cap the number of booths.
She's here,
200.
By the way. She's here.
Oh, is she here? Oh, hey, yay.
The operator
here.
Is here.
Okay. Ms. Rodriguez is actually here now. The understanding was, we capped the number of vendors, say, at 200, 240. So right there, there's a physical cap then on the use, and that will translate into the number of vehicles that be coming here. So if you cap it at 200 vendors, then hopefully you won't see 5,000 vehicles coming through on a given day. It'd be more like the 1,000 number that's coming through right now. Does that help? I mean. Yes, ma'am. You've been very patient, and I'll get to you next.
I would like to recap this segment so you can segue into the next item on the agenda. And I'd like to preface that by saying, I don't know if I speak for everyone here, but personally, I think we're very fortunate to have the fairgrounds that we do. And I think the board is trying to resolve the issues, and we can't resolve individual issues. But correct me if I'm wrong, I think... what I heard Mr. Goldwater say is that he's going to work with you to revise the policies of the noise levels.
Yeah, and everybody should have gotten a copy of this.
Okay, well, do you think we'll have that revision before the next meeting?
Oh, yes, ma'am. Absolutely. This will come back because this thing here, as more I look at it, for example, the provision here in item 3 about the fine, the $1,000 fine after the first warning. Well, I showed that to a couple of attorneys who are Alan Smith, the city attorney for Watsonville, and he just laughed. He said, "Well, there's no legal finding here to support a $1,000 fine because you can't quantify what the claim is of being inappropriate." As far as a sound level, so
yeah,
right there, that the penalty provision of this policy is pretty much legally invalid. So,
well, is it possible to address everyone's single concerns individually or collectively, and maybe everyone could just email you with all their concerns, and you could put them together because there'll be overlapping concerns, and address those concerns at the meeting. If anyone's particular concern has not been addressed at the next meeting, because this will be a time-saving issue, and there's going to be some overlap, then they can bring up that particular issue that has not been addressed in your collective efforts of everyone's concerns. That'll save some time when going round-robin here.
Right.
on a legality issue, you might want to ask your attorney or the city attorney if you put that in your contracts, right. Which I addressed at the last meeting, is that if you stipulate particulars in a signed, written, legal, binding contract, and if they violate that contract, then you do have legal recourse.
Right.
And so there's a lot of different issues. I think we need to give the board a chance in order to resolve this, and it's a work in progress, and see where it's going. And if we focus on what the issues are and find the way to address those issues rather than 30 or 40 of us coming up with individual complaints. There's overlapping ones. There's some that are individual, like this gentleman over here. And I certainly empathize with all of that. You know, a lot of us here live right next door to the fairgrounds, so we have the same kind of issues. And there's no way to make it all wonderful and perfect, but certainly we can make it to there's a good balance of where we can all live with it, and we can continue to be profitable at this fair. We're very lucky to have the fairgrounds here. It promotes business, it promotes revenue for the city. So we have to really work together as a team, and if we can find a remedy of how, that's the operative word, that we're going to do that and save time in doing that so we can move forward faster.
That's fine. Part of the reason for the anger that you hear is because there was a remedy found, for example, with the racetrack 10 years ago. And here we are again.
I understand you see? That. But knowing that, knowing what we have in hand and what's transpired, we need to collectively find out what happened and see what the board is willing to do to get back to where we can all... the fairgrounds
that's
can
what we're doing.
Be,
yeah. Ma'am, you've been real patient. Go ahead.
I've lived here for over 4 years on the fairgrounds, and I love the fairgrounds in this area. And we have such wonderful programs here. And I don't see why we can't have a farmer's market like, for instance, Cabrillo College. I go shopping over there, and my clients go shopping over there. So I think we're going to go over to the other side. Why can't we all have them here?
Maybe this lady here can answer that.
That's all for me.
We don't need the music.
And all those different vendors. I think we need to concentrate on our produce and help our farmers too.
You want to jump in?
Yes, that was the main intention of the market, but unfortunately it wasn't supported. You know, I don't think I see any of you in there from Sunday supporting. So
because there's nothing
farmers get discouraged because I do a lot of advertising for the British Pomeroy and KTMA radio stations, and it turns out that the vendors that got the more support were the flea market vendors, and that's what grew. But our farmers started leaving because they weren't selling their product. So that was minimizing. We're down to six. And in regards to your question of whether we're growing, and the change in price, the change of the entrance was changed immediately, like after the second or third week, because we weren't making enough money to cover cost, so it wasn't much for the music. And the music, since our last meeting, I cut it down to where we had like 3 bands, and I was just down to 1. Because it really doesn't give us any extra income. It was just more for the entertainment of the people attending. But once I found out, it was causing a problem, I had no problem eliminating that, because that really doesn't give us personally, the ones that benefit from that are the Heritage Foundation that, sold more beer. But to me personally, it didn't bring me an extra benefit or extra money. And since I've been here, my rent has been increasing. And so now, they had asked me for a profit and loss report, and I haven't really even made my investment yet. I haven't recovered. So my idea of doing this project wasn't so much it's not a money-making project, but only people that are making the majority of the money are the fairgrounds, with the rent I pay and the Heritage Foundation and their beer sales. And so from last meeting to now, I've cut, the music more than half. And I spoke to Mrs. Kelly, I think, on the first week. Mm-hmm. And I made sure, that the volume was, reasonable to where they couldn't hear it. And when you talk about growing, I've limited the space where I'm not allowing extra people to come in. We
had already opened a new section where the Davy trucks are parked, because we had enough interested vendors where we could grow and expand. But since last meeting, and I realized, you know, that it wasn't what people wanted, we closed that up, and so we're not growing, we're staying as it is, and we're open to new farmers, so I have no problem with growing the farmers market part. But in order to do that, you know, people have to go out and support and buy their product. That's why they go to Cabrillo or any of the other ones, because that's where the people are shopping, not prison.
Yes, ma'am.
I just want to add my two cents. Is that I would love to come over to the farmer's market and get fresh produce, but I will not, and I still won't, step a foot on the grounds with the loud music, because that stops me like a barbed wire fence. I'm not going any closer. Otherwise, I'd be able to find fresh produce.
Okay. All right. Well, it looks like, duly noted. Well, it looks like we want to try to wrap this up. Last thing we want to discuss, and we actually already kind of touched, you know, the edges of this. Everything we touched on this morning is going to, you know, end up being tossed around this next year, and eventually ends up in a full-blown program EIR, Environmental Impact Report. So everybody who's got the questions about, you know, these very, you know ethereal, and specific engineering type questions and mitigation measures, I can assure you, if you've read some, how many people here have read, you know, recently an environmental impact report that generally runs about yay thick? I mean, I unfortunately, this is what used to be my occupation and profession as a planning director. I used to have to coordinate and oversee the compilation of these exhaustive reports. And I swear to God, you can actually read one of these and find an engineering report somewhere in some of these reports, and I'm sure Mr. Goldwater will attest to this, where you can even discover how many proverbial angels can dance on the head of a pin. You know, the age-old question, philosophical question of how many angels can dance on the head of a pin. That's how detailed many of these reports, end up becoming. So, rest assured, we're going to get some detailed analysis on the ambient versus rarefied air and wind conditions and the transmission of sounds at given times of the day and season, yada, yada, yada. That will be discussed, and perhaps a mitigation measure may come out of that saying, the solution is to limit operations during certain times and seasons, whatever. That's where we're going to get to. We're not even close to that yet, but we're going to get there. Okay, so I just encourage y'all to hang in there, keep coming to these meetings, keep providing us information, and for the neighbors and friends that aren't here today, spread the word to them. By all means, please let them know what we're doing here. Spread the word to the entire community. And in case they couldn't be here today, by all means, have them come next time. And we welcome them at the table here, because this is just going to be an incredible, fascinating process. And once we're all done, I can guarantee everybody's going to be incredibly proud of the product that we're going to be completing. Yes, sir.
Yeah, I just want to say I shared this with Mr. Rice now. I managed, as you know, the fair during the 90s. And these issues that we're talking about today are the same issues that went back in the 90s. I mean, I can remember running up and down Folsom Road. I think it was your home.
Yeah.
The one we had the flea market out here and trying to get them to cut it down. I want to compliment Mike, number one, for taking the lead and the board supporting him in doing this. I never had that support, and I'm not sure if previous management had the support either. And now that they have, that he has, it's hopefully we all can be working together to make this facility really the showcase of our county and our community.
Okay, so as far as the journey to our next meeting, yes, ma'am.
We haven't touched on item number four. We haven't gone into
right.
the master
plan. And I have several questions, too.
And that's very important.
Before we adjourn.
Well, we talked about that. We're going to be scheduling meetings here pretty soon. I haven't got any meeting dates set. The next meeting we have, the neighborhood meeting, the master plan team will actually be here.
Oh, okay.
That will be the real kickoff for you guys.
Okay.
We don't have a date.
We don't have a date.
No date yet.
For the master plan meeting?
For our next neighborhood.
Well, that's what I want to kind of get into. So. Okay. We've been really booked with the fair and budget issues. So what I've told everybody, I've told the board, is that let's get the fair behind us. Let's get our next year's budget squared away in the next few weeks, and then let's set the next neighborhood meeting, and invite the master plan team down here, and let's let that be the first kickoff. Let's get going on this thing. So what dates? Would you all want to do? You want to do this in another month again? You want to kind of kick this up and keep it moving?
At what date is the number of races for next year to be determined?
I don't know. Has that been determined yet? Your schedule?
My schedule hasn't been determined. Okay. I submit my schedule typically mid-February to the board.
Okay. So we may have some preliminary, though, in another month or two, maybe?
Yeah, it's going to be consistent with the last couple of years.
The last couple of years.
With 2010, we'll be consistent with 2010. I don't
see. That's as far as the request is concerned, correct?
Well, my contract, the contract that I currently am under says that I can run from March 1 through the last day of October. So that's my contract, and so as long as I'm in those guidelines.
Do you have a contract for next year?
I think I have 9 more years on my contract.
Well, we need to hash this all out, because I'm not quite clear what all the details are on that. So we'll hash this all out, and that'll be an actual agenda item we've talked about.
So, right, is there an actual open contract to have races any and every Friday night from May 1st to the end of October?
March 1st. Yeah.
Through the end of October?
Correct.
So, theoretically, there could be a race every Friday night starting March 1st through the end of October next year?
It's pretty unlikely due to weather, but in theory, yes, that could be true.
And how is that going to be determined in terms of the decision on that?
That's decided with myself and my staff. Mm-hmm.
And the community doesn't have any say-so on that?
Mm-hmm. We're a team player, right?
Yeah,
sure.
And this has got to go back to the board again, once again. So why don't we bring this back for further discussion? Because this is definitely warrants a specific agenda item for next meeting as well.
Good.
So it seems like we're getting some momentum moving here. Hate to see us go 2 whole months. Is it a pleasure of the group here to possibly schedule a meeting the first Saturday of November?
Yes.
Would that be kind of the consensus?
Yeah. Yeah.
What date would that be? Has anybody got a calendar? The 6th?
November
6th? Because I really sense like we got some momentum going here.
Yeah.
Might as well just keep it moving. And this venue here works for most folks. Do you like this?
Yes.
You couldn't ask for a nicer venue, I don't think. We'll keep,
How about a schedule for, do you have a schedule for the stakeholders meeting?
We don't have that yet either.
Like there's no stakeholders, nothing scheduled.
No, because like I said, I can't even see straight. Okay, well, thanks everybody for coming, and we'll get minutes and we'll get this to you guys.
Yeah.